You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Post-show recaps theater presents movies. So many movies as reviewed for you by your friends at post-show recaps, featuring Grace and Ariel and their incredible movie takes. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Post Show Recaps Theater. My name is Grace. My co-host Ariel is, I think, being tested on in a facility somewhere on an island somewhere. So I have another co-host today, which is the great DM Philly. Philly, how you doing?
I am excellent. I am all doped up on Verbulous, and I got a lot to say. Yeah.
No, what's the bad one? No Darkenflux.
What a cool name, Grace. Darkenflux. I thought it was such a cool name. I was like, God, how do I steal this for one of my D&D games without just stealing it? Yeah, it's a good name.
There's a few names. I don't want to spoil the one that I think is the best. I kind of thought Darkenflux is a little silly, but that's okay. We can agree to disagree. We're chatting about Spiderhead, Netflix movie. I was excited for this one. Ariel was excited for this one. Unfortunately, can't join us today. This sci-fi thriller directed by Joseph Kosinski, who also directed Top Gun Maverick. What a couple of months for Joseph Kosinski. Have you dabbled into the Top Gun Maverick world yet, Rich?
Or? I have not. I have been asking folks about it, and I've heard these great things, so I want to go see it in a movie theater before it is out of said movie theaters. But what a dynamically different pair of films for this guy to make, with Miles Teller both, right?
Miles Teller is in both. Rich, the good news about you not having watched Top Gun Maverick is that you still get to watch Top Gun Maverick for the first time.
Yes. Yeah. That's very good news. I'm really hearing excellent things. And I'm looking forward to watching it. Yeah.
It's really good. But yeah, he shifts from doing that. This is mostly because Top Gun Maverick was on freeze for like 3 years. So yeah, this guy had time to make other movies in the meantime. And he chose Spiderhead, which is based on a dystopian short story called Escape from Spiderhead. The movie stars Chris Hemsworth, who's also a producer in the movie, Miles Teller, as mentioned, and Journey Smollett, who I know from Lovecraft Country, a show that was once covered on Post Show Recaps.
Oh, right. I heard the ending of Lovecraft Country did not create as much affection as the beginning, so I never got around to it. But I got excellent performances from like the actors that were involved in this. Like, I enjoyed the acting a great deal of this film.
Spoiler alert for people who watch this movie. Chris Hemsworth does have an American accent. What'd you think, Rich?
I bought it. I am very bad at discerning the American accents. Like, I work professionally in tabletop role-playing games, Dungeons and Dragons. So bad accents are my specialty. And I guess that I've dulled my ears to catching them. How did you feel about it?
I think it just started for me. I had just watched, I'm doing a little bit of a watch through of some MCU films in preparation for Thor Love and Thunder, which I will make an announcement. Post Show Recaps theater, we have a change in policy, Rich. We typically said everything is super. They got the Marvel stuff. Kevin is the expert. He's the comic expert. Josh also has read comics.
Kevin would love that description. I just want to add.
Yeah, right, if somebody could clip that for me, I'm going to make a timestamp. And so we thought, nah, there's already coverage of Marvel movies on Post Show Recap, so we're not going to do it. Surprise. You're going to get double coverage probably of every Marvel movie that's coming down the pipe from now on. Everything is Super is going to cover them from a very like comic book lens. And us here on Post Show Recaps Theater, we're going to be very like hoity-toity. We're like the film critics here.
I love it.
Josh likes to tell us we're the chief film correspondents. We watch a lot of movies. And so we're taking more of an angle of like, yeah, we watch movies, and this is the most popular movie. Let's talk about it. So there'll be lots of coverage on Thor: Love and Thunder coming up. So breaking news here.
I only just saw Doctor Strange in theaters last week, and I don't know if there's any way for me to retroactively negotiate a post-show recaps theater about that film.
Maybe,
because I would gladly record it with you. Yeah. I'm sure that there are a long line of people knocking at the door to help contribute to those. But I'm excited. I love hearing you and Ariel. I just love hearing your voices. But I certainly love hearing the pair of you talk about film and more MCU coverage at PSR. I'm here for it.
Yes, that's right. Why can't we have more than the Ringer's over there doing like 8 podcasts for every piece of media?
Exactly.
So we're gonna do that. Very excited about that. A bit of change of policy here, because if you're here and you don't even know what Everything is Super is, which if you are a comic book fan, if you like Marvel, any Miss Marvel's airing, go check them out. But if you're here just for Ariel and I, we feel like we should have it in our catalog, some Marvel movie coverage. So I got there from, what did you think of Chris Hemsworth accent?
Yep.
I just watched Thor Ragnarok, and he has such a distinct accent, which I'm not even sure is is it Australian in that movie, or is it he's being
I kind of don't think so. He's got the vaguely pretentious British adjacent fantasy hero accent,
right?
Which is one I'm very well accomplished with after much Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was hard not for me to be that's not your voice, but also, the voice I think is his voice isn't his voice either, so it's fine, right? But I agree with you. I thought the performances here were really strong. Let's spoiler-free thoughts give our thoughts on the movie. I'll go first. I liked most of this movie. Most of it worked incredibly well for me. The reason why we decided to cover this is Ariel and I both got pretty excited by this movie because many a film critic that we like had gotten early access to this movie and was like, it's really good. And then the movie got released, and Rotten Tomatoes, both the critics and the fans were like, I don't really like this movie. It's in the 30s and 40s. But people that Ariel and I really respect really liked this movie. And so I was so worried heading into this movie. And I got to say, it works for 80% of the movie. The story is pretty good. The premise is fun. And the acting is really good. So I enjoyed it. And I think people should watch it.
I think a film of controversy such that you just described in terms of like a diversity of opinion on the final product is always interesting as a conversation point, right? I am pretty much agree with you. I think that the story is a very ambitious one. I think it echoes like some interesting stories that I've seen like explored in the past. It's like challenging in the way that great sci-fi can be, that it like can leave you with some interesting questions, right? The performances were extraordinary. I thought like a lot of the set, it's a sort of a bit of a bottle film in a way, like a bottle episode of television. Like the set is not sprawling or vast, right?
But Rich, this is a COVID movie, 100%.
Oh, it's definitely a COVID movie, right? Like, let's get these folks in a set and like establish it. I think that like the set work was like really great and like evocative of some fun ideas. But I do think that while the performances were really strong and conceptually there were some big ideas here, it was not as emotionally resonant as it aspired to be, I think. And yeah, that would be like my general no spoilers kind of take.
For me, the third act is the worst of the movie, and it's like not even close.
Yep.
Like I think they're like, you're like this isn't like my favorite movie ever, but I'm like watching the first and I'm like, there's enough here. I'm watching the second, I'm like,
Got interesting.
And then I'm like, you know, that's basically
it's a little underwhelming and truncated in its climax is kind of how I felt, right? I expected like a bit more, and some of the choices that they made narratively were very straightforward. And I was like, okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like my feeling on the movie. I think that like, it's for me, it's one of the better like social commentary movies of little, I think of the last little while. I'm thinking I went to go see Crimes of the Future. I was not as high on it as some other folks I know were. I felt like that one was trying so hard to be like social commentary. And this movie, I feel like it definitely is also trying to do that. But I don't think it's I think it's more effective than some of the other stuff I've seen recently. Looking at you, Don't Look Up.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Don't Look Up, I thought, was like charming in a certain way, in a very kind of like black comedy sort of way. I think that if you like Hemsworth, if you like Miles Teller, you know, it's a film worth watching. I think you get like a ton of mileage, especially out of these two, as there are sort of central characters and their relationship with one another is very compelling, I think, along the way. If you like these folks, if you like sci-fi, you definitely don't want to miss it. I think amongst like the kind of glut of modern fare that's like out there, I think this was like aspirational in a way that like left me with some really fun thoughts. And to your point of social commentary, I think it was like super evocative of like the Stanford Prison Experiment is really like what I'm thinking about. And which is a kind of classic like, you know, story that's been explored a few times in film, and there's a lot of like conceptual ideas for us to like really examine and explore in terms of the science and morality and modern life and all this kind of stuff that is kind of the bread and butter of what good sci-fi does. So while it didn't necessarily like hit all of my feels and I left like a little bit like, oh, okay, it was definitely good, right? I was very much pleased that I watched it and glad to have it put on my radar.
Yeah, I mean, this is the one we've chosen to watch. There's a ton of streaming stuff out right now that's like going from like, yeah, that was good to like very good. RRR is this Indian movie that is supposed to be like critically acclaimed. I have not watched it yet, but it's supposed to be very, very good. It's on Netflix. Hustle came out on Netflix. Cha-Cha Real Smooth is the Apple TV movie that came out at Sundance last year. I think they were kind of hoping for this year's Coda. It's supposed to be quite charming and pretty good. And I'm missing one other movie, but that's okay. There's a ton of like good streaming options right now. This is I thought this is about as good as the rest of them. So yeah.
Yep. Concur.
Yeah. So let's spoil the movie for people. Hop out now if you have not watched Netflix's Spiderhead. Or stay if you haven't and you don't care to be spoiled. But we start in a state-of-the-art penitentiary, Rich, Spiderhead.
Yeah. So I did like a little bit of research after the fact. Spiderhead, like this name is very evocative. If you know me, you probably know that I really love Spider-Man, and you can't like say Spiderhead. You can't say spider anything probably without thinking of Spider-Man at this point in the world, 2022.
But is this movie in the Spider-Verse?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know. It changes Chris Hemsworth's character a lot if it is. Yeah. Spiderhead, the name is evocative, I think, of the building, of the shape of the actual penitentiary itself, which is a thing I never would have identified had I not read it after the fact. It is not like clear or clarified in any sense during the film itself.
There's one time where Hemsworth is talking with Miles, and I should say their character names probably. Steve is talking with Jeff. And he's like, here at Spiderhead, like in this room, Spiderhead. It's like the only time in the movie. Yeah.
I get that, like, they do reference that that's the name of the facility, right? But I was very much thinking about, like, the webs and the head and, like, the brain stuff of it all. I think there's some metaphor there. Yeah, I thought it, like, opened pretty well. These initial scenes are, like, very fascinating to me. Teller's killing it.
Yeah, and so the premise here is, like, this is a penitentiary where they are conducting experiments in basically exchange for having so the idea of these drugs that are working are these drugs that, like, you have to wear this, like, I think it's called a Mobi pack, like a mobile pack.
I think that's correct. Yep.
You like attach it to like your lower back, and they put in these drugs that then they can like adjust with a smartphone. And so there's a various number of drugs that we will be introduced to. The volunteers of this experiment have all volunteered. They applied and were approved to basically reduce their sentence time. But very interesting that, like, there's a lot of freedom to living in Spiderhead and being part of these experiments, which are pretty good freedom of movement. You can come in and out of Steve's office, freedom of choice, you know, to move around. It's not like the state penitentiary, as Steve will say a couple of times.
No, they are surrounded by creature comforts. I would argue that even there's like luxury in this place, right? As we see the inside of the facility, and they have this kind of these communal kitchens and these open spaces that are like interacting with one another. It is a very kind of open environment, right? And you get that vibe. I will say the Mobi packs, I think, like awesome design. As we get these lights, right? They do a lot with like colors, the colors of the different drugs, and some of these opening scenes. Like Teller's in the bed, and we see the kind of lights activating through his t-shirt, and it's creating this like immediate intrigue of like, what's going on there? What is this thing? What's happening? The packs, like at the lower back, seemingly one might infer like these drugs are being administered like directly through like a spinal injection, a spinal tap, right? Which feels very like powerful and evocative already. The way the packs are kind of like inserted in the flesh, it seems like invasive. But this whole notion of like prisoners volunteering for this experimental program in exchange for freedom in all these different ways is already very compelling, right? As you're talking about modern commentary and like the prison system, the penal system, certainly here in the US, very problematic. There's a lot of issues that can be discussed around that. And this is immediately positing like a different way forward, right? Which is interesting. Right. Yeah.
Well, I think we can spoil the movie entirely if, like, you know, we don't need to. Everybody presumably either doesn't care to be spoiled or has watched the whole movie. But this really worked for me. The part of this movie that works the best for me is the ultimate reveal that all of the drugs, like he's testing one specific drug, B6, which he wants to call
OBDX.
Very good, I thought.
Very clever.
That all of these drugs, none of the other drugs really ultimately do much more than like whatever, but the main drug that's being tested is this B6, which is will you follow our commands, right? And so I think this worked incredibly well in terms of like this premise that, like, yeah, choose to do this experiment, which like is a thing that you know, like, you know, you know, come and work this like job basically for free, and we'll like reduce your salary. You'll get good, you know, you'll be recommended for good behavior, whatever, all this stuff. That's like an abuse of people. It's all like fake. It's all phony, right? Like, and the fact that like you never had control. I thought that like that commentary worked really, really well. And I didn't see it coming. I did think this was like a movie about like just experimenting these types of drugs, a love drug, a laughing drug. And then for them at the end to be like, no, it's all about obedience and like being like obeying. I was like, oh, it's like such a good commentary for me on the prison system and how like people who go to prison are often like abused in a way to like benefit somebody else, but also this actual drug, like it's a commentary on like corporate, like tech culture of like, like what technology in the wrong hands is like, is terrifying, right? That like there's a drug that can be administered and just you have to obey whatever whoever is in charge wants you to do. It's absolutely terrifying.
Strong agree, right? I think like a lot of the discussion around the penal system in America right now is about the privatization of the industry and like the kind of the fact that ultimately people are profiting off of this system like exorbitantly, right? So as we're like introduced to this idea that that our doctor, our like sweet, charming Chris Hemsworth of a doctor in Steve, right, is working with oversight. Right. That there's like some kind of oversight happening here, but that in fact, he is like completely unrestrained, that ultimately he's been given like absolute governance of these people. And that fundamentally all his exercises, like mastering these other drugs, are being done like through this one singular exercise where he's trying to gain like ascertain absolute control over people. Right. And the implication of that, like it's so all of a sudden extends beyond the idea of the prison system to like, you know, a biochemical advancements like the giant kind of medical industry that exists here and around the world, and the way that like medicine is financed, and you know, how that like is involved into like an economic system, right? The kind of profiteering off of these things that could better the lives of so many people, ultimately to reduce it down to like being about power, control, obedience, right? This is terrifying. Like, it's chilling, and it's made even more chilling by the performance of like our mad scientist, who in fact is a very likable, charming guy, right?
That's like, they make that very clear that he's just like, come and go as you please, you know, you can come into my office. Like Jeff, played by Miles Teller, is often like barging it, like he barges into the being like, I know. So the like central tension of the beginning really comes from basically they keep turning up this like one drug, and I can't remember the name, N40, the love drug, which
N40, what is that? It's Lovactin. Lovactin was the name of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And, so they put Miles in a room with this, you know, he rates her a 7.5, but like starts, you know, you turn up the Lovactin and then they get familiar with each other. And then they bring in this other woman who's a bit older and like traditionally, probably like conventionally less attractive, and they turn up the love drug and they sleep together. But then he then has to pick like, okay, which one of them would you give darkened flux to? The idea being like, I think what like the illusion that they're testing, right, is like, are there any lingering effects from being on these drugs? And Jeff's so clearly like, you know, it's not that I don't feel something, I don't feel sympathy for either of them. I feel like nothing for either of them, because like when I was like wanted to sleep with them, you had me on a drug.
It's great. It's a great moment, right? As we get like the kind of lead up to it, and Steve's got this like great assistant in Mark, right?
Yes.
He's like the assistant to the doctor, and it creates this great foil for a lot of dialogue that's ultimately exposition kind of, right? As we're getting like clarity on a lot of this stuff, and it seems like they're trying to like dial in this Lovactin, right? And Steve, you have Hemsworth like, no, it's great that it's working like this now. Cool. This is like super effective. What we really want to see is like the long-term effects. We need to like track them for like what happens after this moment. Is there establishment of love? Do they fall into like these similar patterns and start to like mimic each other? Right. It's such like a strong sell, because you could imagine a drug like that, the marketability of something like that, the power of like a thing like this. Ultimately, we're talking about like the aphrodisiac of aphrodisiacs, right? An ability to like kind of trigger emotions and like that might be inaccessible to certain people given our experiences as individuals, right? Mm-hmm. There's like so much potential here for good and for evil. It's already like ominous, right? Mm-hmm. As we're seeing, like, especially when it plays out the first time, it's like uncomfortable, these two people like becoming instantly enamored with each other and then like copulating, as it were, right?
And then like being watched as well,
right? Yeah, as they're like being watched, it's very creepy. Then when it happens like the second time, like Mark, the poor assistant, is even like, oh god, dude, I can't, this is a lot, you know? Because now it's like very evident from the way Miles Teller is like portraying it that Jeff is like not feeling great about this, right? Like the first time without the drugs, we can imagine this might happen. Right. The second time, like, this is not a choice Jeff would make without the incitement of the love acting. Right. So it's already very uncomfortable. And we are treading in like this very kind of murky water. I love the relationship specifically between Mark and Steve. The like back and forth between the doctor and the assistant, I think, is really, really strong.
Yeah. So we get, I believe his name is Rogan, played by Nathan Jones, who is a former professional wrestler, I would just like to point out.
Oh, you do love a professional wrestler. Right?
I do. Yep. Jeff is in the room, and then Rogan comes in, and they sit down for a second, and then he goes, no, like, you know, which like, all right, a bit of like,
I wanted to ask about this. Yeah, is this like problematic? You know, is this portrayal problematic? Because I was like, gosh, I don't know how to feel about this.
They do try to slide in the Miles being like, I've never done it. If you've done it, like, you're good, you know, you're good. And I think ultimately, like, I don't need, you know, in terms of like, I don't need people who like don't want to consent to sleeping with people of this, you know, it's
yep,
you know,
yep,
whatever.
Yep.
So it's fine. So like, yeah, they do put it in here. As, like,
I mean, that was kind of my read, just like that, like the whole thing is problematic. You know, this is all like very troubling that like Miles is like, we have Jeff here in the moment, like trying to be like tactful and even like polite, despite the fact that like the man sitting across from him is terrifying with the face tattoos. He's got a particular eye tattoo that makes one of his eyes look like insane. Like it's like recessed into his skull. It's very frightening, right? There's like that tension, but then there's also him being like authentic, like, look, like this is actually where I draw a line, you know, like this is not the person that I am.
And then they're like, well, we're not testing that drug. And so they sit there in sort of like awkward silence before eventually like, all right, we're done. And Jeff immediately, there's some in some shows recently where I'm like, the like clever guy who can like immediately solve everything is like one of my favorite, like just on instinct alone, can be like barges into Steve's office being like, I know exactly what you were doing. You were trying to make, the person that we both slept with pick which one of us gets,
and she's in the office at the moment, I believe, right? Like Heather is there when he comes in, isn't she?
And she's on another drug. And I don't have the names of the drugs listed, but it's one where like you feel like you need to tell, you need to do
it's the verbulous, I think, isn't it?
Because he says like, hey, put a sock in it. And so she starts taking off her shoes because she takes his directions incredibly. And I loved that. That was my favorite little joke, I think, in the movie. Like, put a sock in it. She's like, okay. And she starts taking off her shoes.
And he even says it. He's like, look at her. She's all literally putting a sock in her mouth, you know?
It's, you know what? It's so my sense of humor, in the sense of I often will say, like, I like to take what somebody says and like make it not the way you meant. It's like my favorite type, right? Like, you know, I'm notorious
to take like a turn of phrase and make it as literal as possible. As
or like who's max volume, right? That's just me like playing wordplay, all that. So it's like this, like put a sock in it is like so up my alley.
So did we ping this though as like now in retrospect, as we're like looking back with the clarity at the end, this is actually him testing the like B6, right? The obediax is kind of what it feels like, right? That like she does literally just take the sock and shove it in her mouth. Is there part of that, you think, in the read?
She doesn't get quite there, but she does take off her sock. I'm trying to think back to the scene before. What did they say? Is it called verbulax? What did they?
Verbulous. Yeah.
Verbulous. What does he say it is?
Or verbaloose. what does he say it is? You know, it's like it's inciting like the language centers. There's this great beat in the scene early on where Keller is outside and he's on the kind of like Love Act and he's looking at the stars. It's so beautiful, the clouds rather. And actually, he's like looking across the river at like this kind of like, you know, horrific like plant pumping smoke out of it and like trash on the side of the bank, right? And ultimately, they give him the verbulace, to like get them to articulate. They need to like, this is the experiment, right? So we need to like measure the response, and we can only do so much like studying the brain. We need your words. We need you to articulate what you're feeling, like put the emotion behind it, right? So right. It opens up the language centers, and there's the great beat where he comes back and there's this whole conversation about like, oh yeah, you're coming down off the verbalus, right? Or like you can't find the words. They're just on the tip of your tongue. Like right. I love this beat too, that with every high of each of these drugs, there's like a crash afterwards, right?
Right. For me, the one thing I guess like that's not super, that probably like I would love for it to be a little bit fleshed out more is like, clearly when he does this to Jeff, he is trying to, when he says, who should we give Darkenflax to? He's basically like, I don't want to. And I'd have to go back and replay the movie in terms of like, what are the settings on the phone and all this stuff about like, is he trying like different dosing levels to try and get him to, you know, seeing if you can, if even a little bit will like get him there. But he ultimately is like, I don't want to choose. And Steve doesn't make him choose. I would presume based on her literally taking off her sock that this girl Heather did pick one of them to get the drug. I guess presumably Rogan, because we never see we don't see Jeff get it.
True. Right? Yeah, true. Right? We don't. Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought all this stuff was pretty, and this is where I thought the reason we got here is I thought this is like some of the like the Miles. Jeff Steve stuff. I think their dynamic here, I think, is really strong. I think it's really good.
Agreed. I mean, I think that the back and forth between the two of them, they have excellent chemistry, and there is this frenemies vibe, right? As we're dealing with like ultimately the warden of the prison, who in Steve, in our scientist, Steve Abnasty, and Jeff, who like, you know, is our point of view character, right? And Jeff, like we see it in that moment of the Darkenflax, like it's not that he's got lingering affection because of drugs. It's not that he's like smitten with the like quote unquote prettier girl or whatever it is, right? Ultimately, it's like basic human compassion. He's like, you know, if you're making me choose, I'd rather nobody get this horrible drug. And right. And he then articulates like, I was in the trials, remember? Like, right. I know what this is like. This is a nightmare. Nobody right. should
so he
get
has
this.
Gotten before.
You know, like he's just like, I don't want to do this. And I think it's very humanizing. But the evolving relationship between Jeff and Steve throughout is the like heart and soul of the film. This is, I think, like the strongest emotional stuff for me, because there's this whole vibe that we'll get to later of like the same Jeff and Steve, the same, right?
I do wonder if this movie, I really like Miles Teller in this movie. I wonder how much they're, so to add an extra layer of this is not what the movie is commentating on, but I wonder if you make our lead here, like if you make Journey Smollett the lead of this movie and Miles is sort of like the guy that she's yes, you know, fallen in love with. Because the thing I think could be interesting about the Journey like, so Lizzie, do I have her name right? Yeah, Lizzie.
Yes, Lizzie. Yes.
And Steve, a relationship where like you replace, is that he's such this like charming, affable dude. And I think that in a way it's still there even with Jeff and Steve, is how Steve kind of wants to pretend like there's no power dynamic, like there's no power dynamic.
Yes.
That like we're all equal. That is a thing that I think often like people who abuse people will do in terms of like, but I'm just being a nice guy, you know, I'm being, you know, and how dare you think that like, you know, whatever. And often ultimately he's like doing bad stuff. But I think the commentary of like, people who are a bit too like smarmy for their own good in like real life, and think that like, don't understand that like, yeah, you have power in relationships. Especially one where like you're dealing with prisoners, even if you want to pretend like there's no barriers here. There's no limits, mm-hmm. you know? So I think that is really interesting in this movie. I was just thinking like, yeah, there's another movie, like they remake this movie in a multiverse where like, it's more about like a man and a woman, relationship, but Anyway, I'm just like making up new movies. So,
Yeah, we do that. That's fine. We like to think about ideas. I thought that Lizzie was a very compelling character, but yeah, the dynamic of the two of them as men, there's real bro energy between them, right? There's this real camaraderie that's coming. Cause I think to your point, part of like what Steve Abnesti is doing again and again and again is like cutting himself down. He is like minimizing the actual power dynamics, right? There's like the one great point where he's like saying, he's talking about the Darkin Flax administration. He's like, I tried, I told them, I asked the higher ups, didn't I? And he turns and looks at Mark's like, tell them, didn't I? And Mark kind of is like, because like clearly this did not happen, right? He's just like fabricating this, like, I'm on your side, I'm with you, I am your advocate, I am your ally, like, you gotta understand, like, I hate this too, I'm sorry, you know, I'm just following orders, right? That energy where he's very much presenting himself as though there are like there's a echelon above him that is directing him, and he is reluctantly kind of following through with this, with all of this, right? And it creates this real kind of camaraderie between the two of them that I think I, as a viewer, am like starting to buy into as we're moving through the front end of this thing.
Right. The other biggest thing, I think we'll take a break in a bit, but the biggest thing from like the beginning of the movie as well, that's pretty important, is why Jeff is in prison, which is he was driving drunk and he gets in an accident and his friend dies. We will learn later that's not the entire story. His girlfriend at the time also died, which will play into it, but the story he's telling at the beginning and that we learn as an audience is it's his friend who died, and he has a ton of guilt about this, obviously, but that is why he's in prison. What did you think of there's a moment where he gets a call, she's like, "Ooh, Freedom Fridays," and he gets they like show him the cell phone and he literally climbs a mountain to take the call. What'd you think? I mean, beautiful set piece, so ridiculous, like that's where you get the good bars, I guess.
That was like, they were like, oh, COVID restrictions. We could get you up here on this mountain all alone. We're going to leave set today. Field trip. Field trips are important in this movie. Just an interesting footnote that I only recently discovered after watching this film a couple of days ago. Miles Teller has some scars on his chin. Yeah. Yeah. In his throat.
He does.
This happened from a car accident that he was in as a young man, where he was thrown out the window of a car 80 feet. They were doing like 80 miles an hour. His friend lost control of the car, I believe, on a country rural road. He was heaved out the window. He landed, got like severe injuries. And it's exactly replicated in what we see here. Like in my first moment, we see this scene a few times replayed. Mm-hmm. And in the first moment, it wasn't entirely clear to me that's Miles. Like, we see the car very dramatically. It's a very powerful kind of action scene in a film that doesn't have a lot of action, as the car like crashes into this tree. It's filmed excellently. The shots are all great. The cinematography is compelling. The music, the like rising tension, and this body hurtling out of the window and like crashing into the field. And he like kind of just jumps up and walks back. And I saw a little bit of commentary about this film of people being like, that's a little unbelievable. But in fact, that's exactly what happened to this guy. And I thought that was like a really fascinating art imitating life, imitating art, because I think that he had a lot of trouble finding roles as a young person because of like the very minor scars on this very handsome man's face, you know.
Wow. Do you think some actors Joseph is just like, oh my God, we have to use this in the movie?
I mean, it's kind of wild, right? I mean, so the short story is written, and I think there are some, I've not read it, but I believe there are some major deviations from the film adaptation to the book.
I heard it's pretty much exactly as I believe I heard Sean Fantasy say that he had read the short story and it's like pretty darn close. The car accident is where I could be like, yeah, maybe they didn't have that in the book, but I've heard it's very the same as the book, but maybe that person was wrong.
I think beyond like the factoid here, our Miles Teller factoid, I think that what was very interesting about this to me is that this is not a crime of violence, right? This guy didn't like this guy. It was a crime of negligence, right? I by no means condone like drunk driving. This is a really bad thing. We should all like be really responsible and thoughtful about how we use alcohol, motor vehicles. But it is not out of malice or hate or vitriol or violence that these people lose their lives, right? This guy is like a bad moment. He makes a dumb mistake that, quite frankly, a lot of people do and have. And it's a mistake that you could get away with so many times until the time that you can't, and it catches up to you. And it's very tragic and immediately creates this profound sympathy for the character, right? Even if you've never experienced anything like this, which most of us haven't, or know somebody who's experienced, which probably many of us do, this is a really like powerful way to connect us to the character of like, oh God, this is sad. This poor dude, like he ended up in jail for accidentally killing his friend and ultimately, you know, his lover, his partner, like that's sad, right? This is very sad.
Yeah. Some of the different, so the crime he commits in the story is much different. He is in like a fight and he hits somebody with a brick and he dies.
So that's fascinating. So we have this huge pivot, which makes me feel like it is included because he tells this story to the director probably while they're filming Top Gun. And the guy's like, that's incredible.
Man, I bet he was, I'm surprised he like gave it to the Netflix because I feel like the idea of like, you can only really use this once.
Yeah,
one
true.
Movie,
yeah,
right?
True.
So
yeah.
Like, all right, I'll do it for Spiderheads, you know, which is
fun. Yeah, true.
And unsurprisingly, Rich, can you guess if there's three acts of this movie? Can you guess which act is?
Oh, it's the final act. These were the big differences that I read. Yeah, I heard it ends like dramatically differently. Yes.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll come back with our second, third.
Is that where we're going to talk about poop finger?
I don't want to talk about poop finger. But we will when we come back from a quick commercial break.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time. Apes hunt humans. That is wrong. Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, we are back. Let's chat through the rest of this movie. So basically, Jeff gets told he has been instructed that one of these women must get injected with the dose. It will only last 5 minutes. Jeff eventually agrees. And this scene is really where like we get going in this film for me. Like this is where like we start to ramp up. And where I was like, when I said that, like, I was like, oh, oh, and I'm like, oh,
we've been world building and establishing characters and getting a sense of what's happening here, right? We're like understanding the vibe of the community, what's happening, what's the deal, and this is where, like, okay, now stuff's gonna go down. And it goes down in a very dramatic way as the Darkened Phlox is administered to Heather. The performance I found like visceral, as we get here, right? Like, I know you think it's a silly name, and I was pretty hype about it, but as the Darkened Phlox starts flowing, the reaction is like, you know, indisputably like powerful one to see on screen. The actress that killed it in this role.
Yeah. The darken part, I get. The phlox, I'm like, oh, you lost me.
Phlox were one of my grandma's favorite flower. They're blooming all over the front yard. So like, yeah, I have affection. It's like this danger flower.
Is it a danger flower?
Not really. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Tess Hobrick, I might be pronouncing that name wrong, plays Heather. Does not come out of this experience alive, commits suicide. That's after she damages her Mobi pack and they like can't turn it down. This is where I think Mark also, Mark played by, this is always confusing. He played by Mark Verlaine. Mark Poggio. Mark Verlaine is the actual, is the character name. Mark played by Mark. He's really good in the scene as well. Like, I can't get the thing off and this is bad. We're doing bad things.
He's an extraordinary side character. You know, the relationship between him, he and Steve, is great. He's so on board. He's so excited as like the initial testings are working out. He's like right there with Steve Abnesty of like, this is great, this is great. And then we hit this point and there's like Steve yelling at him, like, drop the dosage. And as this poor woman kills herself and the pair of them are like in this bloodied room that was like immaculate a moment before, like the set of the white and the clear glass, it's also perfectly situated for like this scarlet bloodstain to just like create this explosive kind of dynamic in it, right? Yeah. And his reaction to it is excellent and human and real and like, oh dear God, we've gone too far, huh?
There's a scene earlier where like Steve's walking out with Mark because he's like gonna be away for a week, and he's like, he's very much on his phone, and so like talking but not really he doesn't know Mark at all. What are you gonna do? Do you play skee ball this weekend? He's like, yeah, I love skee ball. Like leaves and like shakes his head. Their relationship is very funny. Not fun in this moment. Steve rushes out of the room. He drops his keys. And so Jeff, who is in the room, snags them, discovering that there are no higher ups, that this company is run by Abnesty Pharmaceuticals, which is Steve's last name. And the drugs, there's like a bingo card and all the drugs are on a bingo card. I think some of them, we have N60 and
G4. N40, B15, I-16, I-27. Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch that we get out there. Is your favorite one the Laffadil? Is that your favorite name, the Laffadil?
The Laffadil's good. I think my favorite name is, what's the one at the end?
OBDX. It's very clever. I thought Laffadil for sure. I love a Laffadil.
Yeah. Laffadil is good. They like have this moment. Jeff, just in time, returns the keys back where they would have been on the floor. Steve not suspecting a thing. And they get high together on this laughing drug, on Laffadil. And we find out here that Steve as well has a MOBA pack on his back.
I love a lot of this. Like the moment of like, as the doctors are in the room dealing with Heather and he goes for the keys, like it's this incredible tension, right? As we have Steve looking back at Jeff through the plexiglass, the blood's everywhere. It seems like it should be more obvious what is happening here, right? As Jeff doesn't even like put the thing in his lap, he changes seats. He's got the diary right on the table. I don't know how I feel about the bingo card, just explicitly. Like, this went through me for a loop. It's clever, right? It's clever in the way. But I also was like, but what? Like, what are we doing here? Like, the drugs are all named after a bingo card. You only then are limited to those, like, what, 25 individual products? Like, the center is a free square. I'm confused, Grace, by the bingo card. I don't know what's going on there.
Free drugs?
Yeah, I mean, be bad. I do love the ultimate, the two of them like hanging out, getting high together, because especially at this point, we're like acknowledging that like Jeff's working him a little bit. It's like the move of like, I'm gonna go drinking with this guy and like start slugging water while I'm pouring him shots.
You know what this reminded me of? This is so Ex Machina.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like in the secluded like bunker type location. The like guy wants to get drunk or high. I'm going to play along with it and just do it because I like the best plan isn't for me to just like beat him up. It's to like play the long game. This is very Ex Machina. The whole movie to an extent is very,
I think it's, yeah, it's evoking a lot of that energy of like the bunker and underground and weird science and like, oh my God, what's really happening is the slow reveals are coming, like for sure.
Yeah. My other reference point was, and I have not said this, but I thought this was very, there's some Severance. Like this is not as good for as sure. Severance, but it's like playing with the same things as Severance of like affecting your brain, you know? And I was almost like, gosh, we should have got a doctor on here. But
we definitely should have. I love those doctors. I mean, 1,000,000% though, as you're talking about like social commentary, like modern criticisms, the corporate role in like, you know, civilians' lives or whatever, how much control is too much control, the kind of like excesses that like corporate greed would drive to for efficiency, to create efficiency, you know, late stage capitalism, right? Like rough, scary stuff to imagine for sure.
Yep. So they're going to get high together. Steve is going to tell Jeff that his father abandoned him as a child. And when they come out of this interaction, I think this is post Lizzie takes the fear drug and is afraid of the stapler.
Yes.
They're like hanging out, you know, sort of like connecting, bonding. They already have this like relationship, you know, and Jeff confesses that like, you know, I also killed my girlfriend in the car. Not just my friend. And so they get close. I thought this for me, I'm like, at this point, like this movie's great. I love
it. I love it. But I think this is like one of the standout scenes, right? Because we know that like Jeff is like playing down and like buying into it, but there's such like kind of camaraderie between the two. And Steve is like lowering his guard a little bit, seemingly, right? Like, yeah. It's really interesting because this whole catastrophic thing happens with Heather. And he's like, he says, the first thing he says, which gets called back later, is like, do you need something? You know, do you want something for like, for the emotions, right? Like drugs, like, yo, you want, you know, and the way that like Steve is revealing, like his father abandoned him as a child. And this, like, this was like his kind of thing. What's the worst thing that ever happened to you? And the energy just like between the two of them in that room, Steve has this great line of like, this is the good stuff, right? Like not world changing stuff, but it's good stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, I love that. I love like that notion of like the chemist, like kind of playing with his own creations. It's very like mad scientist, relatable, accessible. There's like heart happening here.
And there's just we've had this conversation a lot. I believe we talked about this in Under the Banner of Heaven, which was like Steve being like, yeah, my father abandoned me as a child. I kind of like that we never really know whether that's true or not, in the sense of like, is this guy just a manipulator, or is he like a tragic character? Like, is he a character who like needs control because his father left?
Yep.
And I like that it's basically up to the viewer to be like, I don't know which one is true, and I'll just pick.
See, I love the notion that it is real, that like this is a real, like we're talking about the power dynamic, but it has shifted because we don't know, like, you know, we didn't know up until now what Steve has been hiding, but Steve's secrets have been revealed to us and more importantly to Jeff. And now Jeff is the one like obscuring the truth, right? He's like lowering himself and kind of like playing down to like, oh no, I'm just here trying to like work off the trauma of that horrific murder I just watched and was like kind of responsible for, to a certain extent, at least psychologically in my own mind. And the idea that it's like Jeff playing Steve while Steve is like actually opening up and being vulnerable here is very compelling to me, you know, of like the tables being turned a little bit. But
Steve is gonna like notice that Jeff and Lizzie are becoming close. Mark is like, I don't know what's going on here. He breaks down when Jeff is like, what's going on? And so he's going to leave, I believe, to go and like report Steve and what's happening at Spider.
Yep. He's going to go for the cops, right? This is happening while like the Moby pack is being refilled. And, you know, it's one of these beautiful, like they have most of the conversation, but like what's unsaid, what's like happens off screen and is discussed between the two of them, like sets up the kind of final act that we get into here.
So I'm like, this is like the final act here being. Mm-hmm. So Steve is like, Jeff, I need you to administer Darkenflax to Lizzie. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no. And he takes control of Steve's MOBA pack and makes it, he uses the fear drug on Steve to basically get him to admit what the program is for. And he's like, figured out as like, it's B6 from the bingo card. I'm with you. I'm like, yeah, the bingo card, I would never take it or leave
it's
it.
It's a little weird, right? It's a little weird. Yeah.
Yeah. And that like figuring out like all the other projects are like side projects used to like make B6 put the ultimate test. This is like the final experiment of like Steve basically being like, you're here to try and like repent for killing your girlfriend. Would you harm a person that you're having feelings for? Would you do the same thing again, but almost like more intentionally, in a way, because you're being told to do it, actively do it. This is the true test. Would you harm someone you love when you're told to?
The line basically is like, if I could make you repeat what you think like the worst thing you ever did in your life was willingly, I can make anyone do anything, right?
I'm still on board at this point in the movie. I'm like, wow, that's some good stuff.
So this is where I start to slip. I love what's happening in the content of the scene, the mechanics. This is the thing I've been complaining about a little bit in some of the TV that I'm watching. Like the mechanics for me, we're in a sci-fi movie. They're giving us their own laws of how things operate. So how all of a sudden does Steve give this guy the phone that is gonna like make him that vulnerable? Like, there's no setting. You don't need to switch to a different app. There's not a thumbprint. Don't you even need a thumbprint to like open a phone nowadays, Grace?
It's all beta. They're beta testing. I could have used
like a disconnect I had here. Yeah,
I could have used a little like, I feel like if this is like a knockoff Ex Machina, the thing that Ex Machina does well is that like the mad, I feel like I feel like I'm gonna spoil Ex Machina here, but the bad guy in that is so much more well-rounded of a character.
Yeah,
for sure. You can like see his brilliance and his flaws. Mm-hmm. Where I feel like the Hemsworth character Steve here is probably too two-dimensional by this point to be like duped this easily. If that, like, there's just not enough like tension or weight by this point of the movie, and then it just happens. I do love the like sentiment of it. I think you're right that like the plot point to get there is probably like on shaky foundation, but
I mean, I do think it pays, right? Like, you have Hemsworth now like cowering in the corner. There's the point where like Jeff like cranks down the drug, right? He's like, please, no, please, and Jeff like lets him off, right? And it's like, all right, dude, I know what's going on. B6, blah, 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 blah. And what's it called? He's looking for the name, right? And Steve won't give it up. And he's like, all right. And he cranks it back up. And it's like powerful, you know, like this stuff is like working for me there. But yeah.
Like, I really don't want to, I know Ex Machina came out a long time ago, but there's a mechanism in which like this thing, this like, I'm gonna dupe you, is so much better in that movie. It's a whole plan that like, yeah, works within the rules of the universe. And this feels like, you idiot, you gave me your phone, you know? They're gonna leave. Lizzie and Jeff are gonna make a run for it, and I guess all the other inmates are on the obedience drug. I'm like, oh, I think there's a plot hole. Is like, I feel like their thing was given about Jeff is that like the obedience drug isn't working on him. And I'm like, I don't know if I want the explanation, if I want doesn't it work on him?
Back reading that Mark did not like put the obedience drug back into him as he was refilling the MOBI pack, right? Because it ends
They take all the drugs out of Lizzie.
Right. Okay. It ends up like feeding into this conflict, right? As we have like Steve and Jeff fight, right? Like ultimately, like Steve's Moby packet smashed and now all the drugs are surging. But I'm like reading back to the stuff that happened off screen between Mark and Jeff, that Mark just didn't put the obedience drug back in him. He spiked Steve's pack. So this extra obedience drug in Steve's that Steve doesn't know is there. I think there's a point even where like Jeff's saying, or Miles is saying to like Hemsworth, like, he spiked your pack, or it might be the other way around, right? And I mean, it's a little clunky here, right? So it's not clean.
Why can't they tell Steve to just sit and do nothing until the police
surrender? You know what I mean? Call the authorities. But again, we've established like the B6 doesn't work unilaterally, or we wouldn't be like still testing, right? It's not like finalized yet. It's not 100%. But this is where it just gets a little wonky. Like the fight between the two of them is okay. I love the kind of mechanism of the pack getting damaged, like sending Steve into the spiral of like all the drugs surging. The phone gets smashed, and we haven't talked about it much, but the mic drops. Like the soundtrack was exceptional throughout this film. Like as a child of the 80s, I loved a lot of the music that like Steve is playing, like, you know, She Blinded Me with Science and all this other kind of weird music throughout.
So the pack gets damaged. Jeff and Lizzie are gonna make a run for it. Steve is going to announce to all the inmates, like, hey, go get them. And so this is where the movie, I'm like, I hate all of this.
Yeah, it got very reductive and corny. And this is a little bit of like, all right, I guess like you wanted a big ridiculous action thing at the end, but this wasn't even that much action and it's a little goofy. Yeah.
The tone shift for me, it's like I get whiplash. Like, I know, like, talking about music from the 80s, but just like the, like, someone cancel me now. What's the song that's like playing as they're all running through?
Oh my gosh, I'm not remembering it off the top of my head. Grace. I did, of course, when it was happening. I should have made a list of all the mic drops because I thought there were a bunch of
making my dreams come true. Right? That's what's playing at the end.
Bam. Oh no. Yes. 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 I think it is. Yes.
By Hall & Oates. Oh my god. Yeah. Hall & Oates is playing at the end, right? And I just thought, like, so this is where we get poop fingers. It's a fight off poop fingers. We have the guy who's like taking the vacuum cleaner apart and like
he's fighting everybody with the vacuum. Yeah.
Rogan is like listening to music, so he doesn't hear the thing. And so he like never comes up again. And I'm like, that's annoying. Couldn't give him a moment where he like helps. He like stops someone from doing. I've been like, that's a missed opportunity because he's just like listening to headphones. The poop thing, the guy where they're like, oh, I'll just give you the key to whatever, which I guess now I wasn't 100% on the, like, the B6 and how it's, and does it have to be Steve or whatever? Cause that seems to be like, I guess the point is that like, if you just give, but why can't you just give everybody else a different command to stop fighting me? Because they basically, with the guy who like, here's the key to the kitchen and all the food, he's like, oh, okay. And he like drops.
He's just like, oh, cool.
Yeah. Okay. It's just like,
I think there's a little like,
and like,
yes, it starts to like work against its own rules. Cause like we get this reveal in the last second that the B6 is the control drug and whatever. And like, are they on B6? Is it that this is what my big issue was here, Grace? The tone shift was wild. It is like a wild, like, I juxtaposition,
really,
right?
I can't say it any more than that. I really
like,
hate
like
it.
Like poop finger being like enemy number one in the hallway was like this poop finger thing that was like running through the whole movie was like kind of a weird subplot, but then like that we actually have to battle her off and like the poop is like a wet. It's just like, okay. But what got me here is Steve is like doing a Steve thing where he's BSing. There's like a misdirect because what he's saying over the loudspeaker is like, hey, good morning, campers. How's everybody doing? Right. By the way, Jeff and Lizzie are about to ruin it for all of us. You know what I mean? You all love it here. We have so much freedom, but these two had to just push it too far. So you should get them because they're about to, like, you know, cancel the whole party. And so part of me is not parsing here, like, how much of it is the drug? How much of it is that they're like, yo, I don't want to go back to horrible prison. You know, I don't want to like go to solitary confinement and live in a small concrete cell. Like, I like the couch. I like the headphones and the music and like having a kitchen. And like, none of this is ever clear. And the fact that some people seem like straight zombies coming for them relentlessly. There's like this in unison, 12 people smashing down a barricaded like fortress level door. Right. Yep. And then this guy is just like, oh, yeah, you want to go to the cupboard and get some Twinkies? And he has like a Hurley moment from Lost. Like,
yeah,
I don't know, man. Yeah,
I really disliked it. I feel like it doesn't jive with the tone of the movie at all. Like the movie does so much good work to build up. And you're like, and that's what we built up to. OK, I don't mind. I don't mind if they get chased and tormented by everybody. I don't mind that. I just think it's like, it's definitely the poop hand, it's definitely the music that's playing, and it's the guy who gets the food, and Rogan doesn't do anything in the last fight. But I will say, I think that like the I get on the plane, my pack is all messed up, and I crash into the island, I loved it. I thought that was great.
I did love that too. It's a great moment. Hemsworth is giving an extraordinary performance in the plane, right? As he's like shifting through all these wild emotions. It was like evocative to me of like Tatiana Maslany and Orphan Black, right? Like that kind of Andy Serkis energy of like, I'm going to get to cover a bunch of different stuff in a moment. I think like,
he's a good actor. He's good in that.
Yeah, he's extraordinary. I think interestingly, some of the tonal shifts, I think they had some of the same screenwriters as Deadpool. And there is a little bit of that weird oddball like irreverent energy that creeps in.
Because so did you throughout... see the article that's like how it's connected to Deadpool? Did you see that? That's somewhere online.
I just did a tiny bit of like a basic kind of like googling to like back up some of my knowledge base and see like where my takes land amidst critics out there in the world.
Deadpool
I like
writers
the music,
explain like... their Chris Hemsworth dance streams in Spiderhead. So there's a connection to Deadpool, because it's the same writers, but there's like a nod to Deadpool in this movie. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I thought the music worked throughout, and I even like the Hall and Oates playing during this like pressing chase here. Like that didn't get me as much as like it was the tone shift was like wild, but there was this weird quirkiness to the whole thing that I think is really embodied by Steve Abnesti's character and like Hemsworth's performance. That wasn't my problem. It was more with like the mechanical components here that I'm like, you've done a pretty good job telling a tight story that makes sense up into this point, and I've just lost too many threads. Like I don't understand how some of these things are happening anymore.
If folks have their bingo cards ready, you can check off dark bingo. Rich, I love tonally sad, dark
me too
stuff, and I just feel like it taints so much of the beginning of the movie of like, because they do this thing where there's a really great song, I don't know what the name of it is, but the song that plays like when he's like doing all the emotions and then he crashes his plane and then they're driving away on the boat and they get away from all the people who've come through the door. It's all really good. And then you get like the Miles Teller voiceover that's basically like the idea of like self-forgiveness. You have to work on it and you'll choose when you're ready to forgive yourself. I'm like, is that what the theme of the movie? To an extent, yes. And I feel like you did so much good stuff at the beginning. And then you totally like spilled everything over the like third act. And then you're like, then you at the very end, you're like, but also remember how serious this movie is. And I'm like, I can't. You just had poop hands in the movie. I'm sorry. I can't take you know? And so like, that's just my biggest critique of the movie is that I just feel like it's too tone shifting for me. But you know, I mostly like this movie. So
I did too. I thought again, like I think like if you dig these actors, the performances carry a lot of weight throughout. I just feel like it like loses its focus at the end and just kind of like peters out. We've been dealing with like these really strong ideas and there is no like real thesis about them or like anything like that. We're focusing back in. I love romance, Grace, but like we have to get the love story at the end, you know, and like they get away together and like we need the optimistic ending to this like kind of tonally dark story. I think like the big change that I had flagged from the adaptation is that in the end, Jeff kills himself. I think like Jeff ends up like very doped up on the Darkenflox and is like, I'm going to kill myself. I'm never going to like contribute to a situation like this again, where like I can bring violence outwards on others. And like, God, it's a wild like shift from that. I don't know that that would have worked better, but
Lizzie's not in the book as well. So yes, there's true. Nobody for him to like.
It's an artificial love interest, right? And like, yeah. I kind of like feel the thinness of that at the end as Lizzie has this big reveal of what she's doing here, right? All the while, Lizzie's been talking about like shoplifting. We used to steal people's stuff. I remember Christmas morning opening other people's sweaters. Like, we grew up with that a lot. We thought it was normal. And then we get the big reveal when, like, before the Darkenflox moment, where she's like, I'm the lady who killed my baby. Give me the drugs. Oh, yeah. I deserve it. Self-flagellation, right. Self-punishment. And so that's clearly that. Like part of the theme that we're exploring here is that these people ultimately, did they volunteer for this program for more freedom in the prison system? Sure. But to some extent, some of them did this as like a masochistic manifestation of their guilt. Right. This is like self-flagellation. They have.
I mean, and I think that's interesting from a like, do you really have freedom aspect? This movie is all about like you've been controlled to like obey the commands of Steve. But if you can like the idea that like you're in prison, you don't have freedom. But then you have this thing that like feels like freedom, but it's not really freedom because, you know, like ultimately it's not good. I think all that stuff is good. And the ending for me, it's so cartoony, I think, for me, that it really dampers the movie for me. And then I think like, in my opinion, and this is a controversial take, endings are very important to movies.
They're supremely important. It shouldn't be a controversial take. So I think
endings I don't think it is a controversial take, which is why I'm being facetious. Yes.
They are. I'm just like too overt to understand your facetiousness. I think that they're hard sometimes, but this one like was carrying such a great kind of pace and like good momentum. And I felt like there was all this energy here that I just feel like we shifted way too far away from like what was relevant, as like the cops are closing in on this facility. And it just reduces down as like the whole thing. We're just about this love story and these two escaping this prison. And like, that's not the movie I've been watching for an hour and a half here. You know what I mean? Like, not for nothing, like call me cold hearted, but I don't actually care that much about the relationship between the two of them. Like, I'm deeply invested in Jeff as a character. And I'm like, glad to see Steve like get his comeuppance or whatever it is, like the kind of payout there I think is good, but they just like run in separate directions and like whatever. I don't know.
I think that like I don't want this movie to be longer because I think it's like perfect. It comes in about like an hour 40. But I do think like I talked earlier about like, could you switch like Jeff and Lizzie being main characters, which is not what the short story does. But I also think like part of that is like, even if you don't swap them, and I don't think they need to be swapped necessarily, I think if you're going to add Lizzie in here, you need to give more. I really like Journey Smollett in this movie, but I do feel like she is totally there for Jeff.
Doesn't pass the Bechdel test. Yeah. I mean,
and the fact that like this like extreme motherhood thing comes up like at the last hour to basically again be a plot device for Jeff, I think is like bet. And again, Lizzie is not in the short story. This is a creation of the movie, and I think like the Hollywoodization to an extent. There's two things that I think is, one is like, yep, it's a love story, and how do we fit a woman in this that he can fall in love with, but not to the point where like we want to actually like make her that important. She's not the main character. And then this, like, we got to have the action piece. And I also feel like I talked about the Marvelization of, we were talking before podcast about the Marvelization thing. Marvel does serious movies with like, then like they're funny. There's funny moments in them. And I feel like this movie was like, and we're going to have this hilarious action scene. And I'm like, it doesn't work. You didn't get how it works, I think, to be funny during a serious situation, for me at least. But
as we're sitting here talking about it, I think I would have had more appreciation if they're not in love at the end, if it's not a love story, and if it's just about his human compassion again, right? Like ultimately that's where he stood when you have the first pair of women that he's got to choose who's going to get the Darkin Flocks. And he comes down, like, I thought that was a really powerful moment where he's just like, I just don't want to give this to anybody. Like, I experienced this. This is horrible. You know, why would I want to give this to anyone? And the notion that like that could have pushed on it. It just, to your point, the Hollywoodization of it all. I was like much less jarred by the tone shift because I had felt this very weird, quirky energy. We just watched Under the Banner of Heaven and we were talking about why Russell's character is like kind of quirky but dangerous, right? And I feel like there is, Hemsworth is doing that to like up to 11 on the kind of scale. Like this character is so kind of charming and affable and likable and like relatable and all this stuff, even though he's like absolutely the point of menace, right? He's the monster in the like film. And ultimately, it just robs itself of some power here at the end because we have to like reduce it down to like, you know, boy gets girl, they run off into the sunset, live happily ever after, villain flies into a mountain. The end. It felt like paint by numbers. Like
it shifts from being a pretty like low-key sci-fi movie to then being a blockbuster, right? Like trying to be a blockbuster.
Yeah.
Here's the question we've all been at, and I've been asking myself this whole thing. Have I been pronouncing Chris Hemsworth wrong? I feel like you say Hemsworth. Have I been pronouncing his name wrong?
No.
Hemsworth.
I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but potatoes, Hemsworths, and Hemsworths. I wonder if each of the different brothers has a slightly different pronunciation.
That's right. And you also, we could just say like, I'm doing like the fake British, like.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm doing the fake American, accent. Yeah,
Hemsworth. Hemsworth. Yes. Hemsworth. Yeah.
Hemsworth. Yeah. Hemsworth. Yeah.
Yeah. Hemsworth. All right. That's Spiderhead.
Yeah. Rich. Come from my wig, Thor fans. I apologize for pronouncing Chris's name wrong.
I'm sorry if I pointed it out, but I feel
I like Spiderhead. I think it's worth the watch. I think at an hour and 40 minutes, like there's more good than bad in here. And, especially the performances from the leads, including like Lizzie and Jesse Smollett, like these were great. There was great performances. I don't think it's going to be your favorite movie of the year, you know?
At an hour 20, if you want to like turn it off and then like read the end of the short story, it's probably, I guess there's no Lizzie in there. Just make up what happens at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Watch the plane crash. That was kind of cool. All right, that's our coverage of Spiderhead. Rich, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Grace, for having me. It's always a delight. I'm sad that I got to miss Ariel today. I hope that I sufficiently substituted in his incredibly large shoes. It is always a delight to come talk films with you guys. So thank you for having me.
I will have to ask you, are you okay if we administer Darkin Flaxen to Ariel upon his return? Are you
acknowledge?
Okay, good. What else do you have going on, Rich?
Oh, so many things, Grace. Not as many as you, but we just finished wrapping up our podcast coverage of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Myself, Mike Bloom, LaTanya Starks, we just recorded the podcast for the final episode of the season, episode 6. I'm already speaking out of turn. We're coming back one more time next week to do a feedback, kind of wrap-up show, looking back at the season as a whole, talking about Star Wars, where we're at, what we expect next, where we think we're going. You and I were recently podcasting about Under the Banner of Heaven. We're getting together to do one more feedback show about that, which is very exciting. I am streaming over on twitch.tv/DM Philly. You can catch myself and Grace and a bunch of post-show recaps, luminaries, dare I say, playing all kinds of fun role-playing games. We just last Friday had our episode 8 of Humble Year, where you and our friends play a bunch of cute forest animals on an adventure of a classic kind of fantasy fiction. On Tuesday nights, you can catch us over there playing D&D in space as we have our Spelljammer campaign, Dragonfly. We had special guest star Jess Sterling come in for a really cool episode of Dragonfly this week, which was very fun. I am also doing a Wheel of Time role-playing game show, Threads in the Pattern, this Sunday, 8 p.m. We will be back. We are telling a story about characters in the world of the Wheel of Time happening simultaneously with the books or the television show. If you dig any of that kind of stuff, you can go follow me on Twitch. I would really appreciate it. Give me a follow. You get a free subscription every month if you have Twitch Prime. I would appreciate those. That's pretty much it. More to come, but that's all that's on the radar now.
I'm gonna clarify. It's on Twitch. If you have Amazon Prime, so if you have Prime Video, if you want it for the free deliveries, that means you have a free Twitch subscription to give out. So you could go and create a Twitch account, link it to your Amazon, and give that to Rich because it helps tremendously.
It does help tremendously. Thank you for clarifying that. I'm always self-conscious about my plugs, but yes, you have $5 free of Amazon money that you can contribute my way if you wanted to, and I would appreciate it.
If you're like, I would do that, but I don't know how to do it, you can tag me in the Discord and I'll help you.
Oh, yeah.
Or tweet me, DM me, because not everybody's in the PSR Discord. Yes, I just wrapped up some coverage of Peaky Blinders season 6, the series finale, although there is a movie coming, so that will probably be in this feed at some point, Push Recaps Theater, although probably not soon. Also, yes, as Richard Under the Banner of Heaven, but also going to record a Shining Girls feedback episode with Dr. Amanda and Dr. Melissa this week, probably come out the day after this podcast drops. So if you watched that, come check it out. And that's really it for me on Post Recaps at the moment, except next week we'll be back for more coverage here on Post Show Recaps Theater. I know for sure one of the movies we're doing, and I think we might be doubling up next week because there's some cool movies that are coming out this week that we'll cover next week. For sure one of them we're doing is Elvis. Very excited. Ooh. We have not had a good, like, musical, like, drama doc, you know, like a biopic True. In a long time. Tom Hanks is pulling off quite the accent. So we'll be covering that. And I'm very excited to say that we are going to be joined by someone I met through the Patreon program, who I think is tremendous. I'm very excited to chat with the one and only Bram, who I believe will be making at least their post-show recaps debut, if not their podcasting debut in ever. So very excited for Bram to come on next week. And we might cover The Black Phone next week, which is this new Ethan Hawke show, Rich. Ethan Hawke recently in...
I believe it was written by Joe Hill, who is Stephen King's son, also the comic creator of Lock and Key. Joe Hill quietly making an incredible career for himself. This guy is an extraordinary writer, and almost everything he's done, I have loved. I love Lock and Key. Expect some coverage on that when season 3 drops. But yeah, I am really high to go see Ethan Hawke in this Black Phone movie. Yes.
He was really good in Moon Moon Knight recently. His daughter was in Stranger Things, right? Yes, I'm correct.
Yeah, he was on The Northman, which we talked about right here.
He was on The Northman. So yeah, tons of Ethan Hawke love here.
Ethan Hawke back in our lives. This is good for everyone.
Yeah. So Black Phone, I think we'll be covering that one as well. So expect another doubleheader because it's like blockbuster season now. Top Gun Maverick saved cinema, and now there's so many movies to watch. So Elvis and probably The Black Phone next week, which is very exciting. Over on Rob is a podcast, do the Off Speed podcast to cover some sports. And also we have a series called The Pride Has Spoken, where you're celebrating LGBTQ survivors. Rich, I got a message today. They say, never look at the YouTube comments, I got told. But I looked at the YouTube comments of our latest episode, and I saw this like lady, and she was just like, I love learning about all this stuff. I'm just like a cis white grandmother, and I love this. And I was like, oh my God, my heart. It's so big right now. So that has been a very important podcast for me personally to get to share with the world. And I'm glad people like this grandma is just like, this is so great. I love learning about
I'm
queer
not
people.
A grandpa. If you listen, no spoilers for Obi-Wan, but if you listen to the most recent Obi-Wan podcast, you will discover that generally I prefer Muppets to children. That being said, as somebody without any children, but a great affection for Muppets, I'm really proud of you. I love The Pride Has Spoken. And as a middle-aged cis white man, it is like powerfully illuminating and educational for me to hear about the experiences of people whose lives are dramatically different from mine. It's an excellent project, and I love what you guys are doing with it. You only don't read the YouTube comments if the one bad one's gonna rankle you for a couple of days.
I know. There was no bad ones, so it was great. And I'll Venmo you for that.
No problem.
That compliment. All right, I'm on Twitter at High From Grace. We'll be back next week. I almost said next back week. but I didn't. We'll be back next week. Ariel will return, I believe. So yeah, exciting.
That's like MCU billing. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. Ariel will return.
Will return. Yeah, for Elvis and I think the Black Dog. So we will see you next week. Until then, bye bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.